Chapter 34 A Silver Arrow. Elaine had the cooking that evening, which meant that none of the food was simple, despite the fact that they were eating on stools around a cook fire with crickets chirping in the surrounding woods, and now and again some night bird's thin, sad cry in the deepening darkness. The soup was served cold and jellied, with chopped green ferris sprinkled on top. The light knew where she had found ferris, or the tiny onions she put in with the peas. The beef was sliced nearly thin enough to see through, and wrapped around something made from carrots, sweet beans, chives, and goat cheese, and there was even a small honey cake for dessert. It was all tasty, though Elaine fretted that nothing was exactly the way it should be, as if she thought she could duplicate the cook's work in the royal palace in Camelin. Nynaeve was fairly sure the girl was not fishing for compliments. Elaine would always brush away compliments and tell you exactly what was not right. Tom and Julin grumbled about there being so little beef, but Nynaeve noticed that they not only ate every scrap, but looked disappointed when the last pea was gone. When she cooked, for some reason they always seemed to eat at one of the other wagons. When one of them made supper, it was always stew, or else meat and beans so full of dried peppers that your tongue blistered. They did not eat alone, of course. Luca saw to that, bringing his own stool and placing it right next to her, his red cloak spread to best effect, and his long legs stretched out so that his calves showed well above his turned-down boots. He was there almost every night. Oddly, the only nights he missed were when she cooked. It was interesting, really, having his eyes on her when a woman as pretty as Elaine was there, but he did have his motives. He sat altogether too close. Tonight she moved her stool 3 times, but he followed without missing a word or seeming to notice, and he alternated comparing her with various flowers, to the blossom's detriment, ignoring the black eye he could not miss without being blind, and musing over how beautiful she would be in that red dress, with compliments on her courage thrown in. Twice he slipped in suggestions that they take a stroll by moonlight, hints so veiled that she was not entirely sure that was what they were until she thought about it. "That gown will frame your unfolding bravery to perfection," he murmured in her ear. "Yet not a quarter so well as you display yourself, for night-blooming Dara lilies would weep with envy to see you stroll beside the moonlit water, as I would do, and make myself a bard to sing your praises by this very moon." She blinked at him, working that out. Luca seemed to believe she was fluttering her lashes. She accidentally hit him in the ribs with her elbow before he could nibble her ear. At least, that seemed to be his intention, even if he was coughing now and claiming he had swallowed a cake crumb the wrong way. The man was certainly handsome. "Stop that!" And he did have a shapely calf. "What are you doing looking at his legs? But he must think her a brainless ninny." It was all in aid of his bloody show. She moved her stool again while he was trying to get his breath back. She could not move it far without making it clear that she was running from him, though she held her fork ready in case he followed again. Tom studied his plate as though more than a smear remained on the white glaze. Julin whistled tunelessly and nearly silently, peering into the dying fire with false intensity. Elaine looked at her and shook her head. "It was so pleasant of you to join us," Nynaeve said, and stood up. Luca stood when she did, a hopeful look in his eye along with the shine of the firelight. She set her plate atop the one in his hand. "Tom and Julin will be grateful for your help with the dishes, I am sure." Before his mouth finished falling open, she turned to Elaine. "It is late, and I expect we'll be moving across the river early." "Of course," Elaine murmured, with just the hint of a smile. And she put her plate atop Nynaeve's before following her into the wagon. Nynaeve wanted to hug her, until she said, "Really, you should not encourage him." Lamps mounted in wall brackets sprang alight. Nynaeve planted her fists on her hips. "Encourage him? The only way I could encourage him less would be to stab him." Sniffing for emphasis, she frowned at the lamps. "Next time, use one of Aludra's fire sticks. Strikers. You are going to forget one day and channel where you shouldn't, and then where will we be? Running for our lives with 100 white cloaks after us. Stubborn to a fault, the other woman refused to be diverted. I may be younger than you, but sometimes I think I know more of men than you ever will. For a man like Valen Luca, that coy little flight of yours tonight was only asking him to keep pursuing you. If you would snap his nose off the way you did the first day, he might give up. You don't tell him to stop. You do not even ask. You kept smiling at him, Nynaeve. What is the man supposed to think? You haven't smiled at anyone in days. I am trying to hold my temper, Nynaeve muttered. Everybody complained about her temper, and now that she was trying to control it, Elaine complained about that. It was not that she was fool enough to be taken in by his compliments. She certainly was not so big a fool as that. Elaine laughed at her, and she scowled. Oh, Nynaeve, you cannot hold the sun down at dawn. Leany could have been thinking of you. With an effort, Nynaeve smoothed her face. She could, too, hold her temper. Didn't I just prove it out there? She held out her hand. Let me have the ring. He will want to cross the river early tomorrow, and I want at least some real sleep after I'm done. I thought I would go tonight. Concern touched Elaine's voice. Nynaeve, you've been entering Telairun Riod practically every night except the meetings with Egwene. That bear intends to pick a bone with you, by the way. I had to tell them why you weren't there yet again, and she says you should not need rest however often you enter unless you're doing something wrong. Concern became firmness, and the younger woman planted her fists on her hips. I had to listen to a lecture that was meant for you, and it was not pleasant, with Egwene standing there, nodding her head to every word. Now I really think that tonight I should... Please, Elaine. Nynaeve did not lower her outstretched hand. I have questions for Birgitta, and her answers might make me think of more. She did have, sort of. She could always think of questions for Birgitta. It had nothing to do with avoiding Egwene and the Wise Ones. If she visited Telairun Riod so often that Elaine always went to the meetings with Egwene, that was simply how it fell out. Elaine sighed, but fished the twisted stone ring from the neck of her dress. Ask her again, Nynaeve. It is very difficult facing Egwene. She saw Birgitta. She doesn't say anything, but she looks at me. It is worse when we meet again after the Wise Ones have gone. She could ask then, and she still doesn't, and that makes it far worse. She frowned as Nynaeve transferred the small Turangreal to the leather cord around her own neck, with Lan's heavy ring and her great serpent. Why do you suppose none of the Wise Ones ever come with her, then? We don't learn very much in Elida's study, but you would think they would at least want to see the tower. Egwene doesn't even want to talk about it in front of them. If I seem to come close, she gives me such a look that you'd think she meant to hit me. I think they want to avoid the tower as much as possible. And wise they were indeed for that. If not for healing, she would avoid it, and Aes Sedai too. She was not becoming Aes Sedai. She was just hoping to learn more of healing, and to help Rand, certainly. They are free women, Elaine. Even if the tower was not in the mess it is, would they really want Aes Sedai traipsing through the waste, scooping them up to carry back to Tar Valon? I suppose that is it. Elaine's tone said she could not understand it, though. She thought the tower wonderful, and could not see why any woman would want to evade Aes Sedai. Sealed to the White Tower forever, they said when they put that ring on your finger, and they meant it. Yet the fool girl did not see it as onerous at all. Elaine helped her undress, and she stretched out on her narrow bed in her shift, yawning. It had been a long day, and it was surprising how tiring standing still could be when someone unseen was hurling knives at you. Idle thoughts drifted through her head as she closed her eyes. Elaine had claimed she was practicing when she had acted the fool with Tom. Not that the fond father and favorite daughter they tried on now was much less foolish to watch. Maybe she could practice herself, just a bit, with Valen. Now that was foolish. Men's eyes might wander. Lan's had better not, but she knew how to be constant. She was simply not going to wear that dress. Far too much bosom. Vaguely she heard Elaine say, "Remember to ask her again." Sleep took her. She stood outside the wagon in the night. The moon was high, and drifting clouds cast shadows over the camp. Crickets chirruped, and the night birds called. The lions' eyes shone as they watched her from their cages. The white-faced bears were dark sleeping mounds behind the iron bars. The long picket line stood empty of horses. Clarine's dogs were not on their leashes beneath her and Petra's wagon, and the space where the Sredit stood in the waking world was bare. She had come to understand that only wild creatures had reflections here, but whatever the Shan Chan woman claimed, it was hard to think that those huge gray animals had been domesticated so long that they were no longer wild. Abruptly she realized that she was wearing the dress, blazing red, far too snug around the hips for decency, and a square neck cut so low she thought she might pop out. She could not imagine any woman but Berylaine donning it. For Lan, she might, if they were alone. She had been thinking of Lan when she drifted off. I was, wasn't I? In any case, she was not about to let Birgitta see her in the thing. The woman claimed to be a soldier, and the more time Nynaeve spent with her, the more she realized that some of her attitudes and comments were as bad as any man's. Worse, a combination of Berylaine and a tavern brawler. The comments did not come out all the time, but they certainly did whenever Nynaeve allowed idle thoughts to put her in anything like this dress. She changed to good, stout Two Rivers wool, dark, with a plain shawl she did not need, her hair decently braided again, and opened her mouth to call Birgitta. "Why did you change?" the woman said, stepping out from the shadows to lean on her silver bow. Her intricate golden braid hung over her shoulder, and moonlight shone on her bow and arrows. "I remember wearing a gown that could have been twin to that once. It was only to attract attention so Gadol could sneak by. The guard's eyes bulged like frogs, but it was fun, especially when I wore it dancing with him later. He always hates dancing, but he was so intent on keeping any other man from getting close that he danced every dance." Birgitta laughed fondly.
"I won 50 gold solids from him that night at Spin, because he stared so much he never looked at his tiles. Men are peculiar. It was not as if he had never seen me. That's as may be," Nynaeve cut in primly, wrapping the shawl firmly around her shoulders. Before she could ask her question, Birgitta said, "I have found her," and all thought of the question fled.
"Where? Did she see you? Can you take me to her, without her seeing?"
Fear fluttered in Nynaeve's belly. A fat lot Valen Luca would say about her courage if he could see her now, but she was sure it would turn to anger as soon as she saw Mogadine. "If you can bring me close..." She trailed off as Birgitta raised a hand. "I cannot think she saw me, or I doubt I would be here now." She was all seriousness now. Nynaeve found it much easier to be around her when she showed this side of being a soldier. "I can take you close for a moment, if you want to go, but she is not alone. At least, you will see. You must be silent, and you must take no action against Mogadine. There are other Forsaken. Perhaps you could destroy her, but can you destroy five of them?" The fluttering in Nynaeve's middle spread to her chest and her knees. Five. She should ask what Birgitta had seen or heard and let it go at that. Then she could return to her bed and... But Birgitta was looking at her, not questioning her courage, only looking, ready to do this thing if she said. "I will be silent, and I won't even think of channeling." Not with five Forsaken together. Not that she could have channeled a spark at that moment. She stiffened her knees to keep them from knocking.
"Whenever you are ready."
Birgitta hefted her bow and put a hand on Nynaeve's arm, and Nynaeve's breath caught in her throat. They were standing on nothing, infinite blackness all around, no way to tell up from down, and in every direction a fall that would last forever. Head spinning, she made herself look where Birgitta pointed. Below them, Mogadine also stood on darkness, garb nearly as black as what surrounded her, bent and listening intently. And as far below her, four huge high-backed chairs, each different, sat on an expanse of glistening white-tiled floor, floating in the blackness. Strangely, Nynaeve could hear what those in the chairs said as well as if she had been among them. "Never been a coward," a plumply pretty sun-haired woman was saying. "So why begin?" Seemingly attired in silver-gray mist and sparkling gems, she lounged in a chair of ivory worked so it appeared made of naked acrobats. Four carved men held it aloft, and her arms rested along the backs of kneeling women. Two men and two women held a white silk cushion behind her head, while above more were contorted into shapes Nynaeve did not believe a human body could attain. She blushed when she realized that some were performing more than acrobatic tricks. A compact man of middling height with a livid scar across his face and a square golden beard leaned forward angrily. His chair was heavy wood, carved with columns of armored men and horses, a steel-gauntleted fist clasping lightning at the back's peak. His red coat made up for the lack of gilding on the chair, for golden scrollwork rolled across his shoulders and down his arms.
"No one names me coward," he said harshly. "But if we continue as we are, he will come straight for my throat."
"That has been the plan from the beginning," said a woman's melodious voice. Nynaeve could not see the speaker, hidden behind the towering back of a chair that seemed all snow-white stone and silver. The second man was large and darkly handsome, with white wings streaking his temples. He toyed with an ornate golden goblet, leaning back in a throne. That was the only possible word for the gem-encrusted thing. A mere hint of gold showed here and there, but Nynaeve would not have doubted that it was solid gold beneath all those glittering rubies and emeralds and moonstones. It had an air of weight, quite apart from its massive size.
"He will concentrate on you," the big man said in a deep voice. "If need be, one close to him will die, plainly at your order. He will come for you. And while he is fixed on you alone, the three of us linked will take him. What has changed to alter any of that?"
"Nothing has changed," the scarred man growled. "Least of all my trust for you. I will be part of the link, or it ends now."
The golden-haired woman threw back her head and laughed. "Poor man," she said mockingly, waving a beringed hand at him. "Do you think he would not notice that you were linked? He has a teacher, remember? A poor one, but not a complete fool. Next he will ask to include enough of those black Aja children to take the circle beyond 13, so you or Ravine must have control." "If Ravine trusts us enough to link when he must allow one of us to guide," the melodious voice said, "you can display an equal trust." The big man looked into his goblet, and the mist-clad woman smiled faintly. "If you cannot trust us not to turn on you," the unseen woman continued, "then trust that we will be watching each other too closely to turn. You agreed to all of this, Samael. Why do you begin to quibble now?" Nynaeve gave a start as Birgitta touched her arm, and they were back among the wagons with the moon shining through the clouds. It seemed almost normal compared to where they had been.
"Why," Nynaeve began, and had to swallow. "Why did you bring us away?"
Her heart leaped into her throat.
"Did Mogadhin see us?"
She'd been so intent on the other Forsaken, on the mingled strangeness and commonplaceness of them, that she had forgotten to keep an eye on Mogadhin. She heaved a fervent sigh when Birgitta shook her head. "I never took my gaze from her for more than a moment, and she never moved a muscle. But I do not like being so exposed. If she had looked up, or one of the others." Nynaeve wrapped her shawl tightly around her shoulders and still shivered.
"Ravine and Samael."
She wished she did not sound hoarse.
"Did you recognize the others?"
Of course Birgitta had. It was a foolish way to phrase it, but she was shaken. Lanfear was the one hidden by her chair. The other was Grandal. Do not think her a fool because she lolls in a chair that would make a Senjay no-room keeper blush. She is devious, and she uses her pets in rites to cause the roughest soldier I ever knew to swear celibacy.
Grandal is devious, Mokadine's voice said, but not devious enough.
Birgitta whirled, silver bow coming up, silver arrow almost flying to knock, and abruptly hurtled 30 paces through the moonlight to crash against Nynaeve's wagon so hard that she bounced back 5 and lay in a crumpled heap. Desperately, Nynaeve reached for Sidar. Fear streaked through her anger, but there was anger enough, and it ran into an invisible wall between her and the warm glow of the true source. She almost howled. Something seized her feet, jerking them backward and up off the ground. Her hands flew up and back until wrists met ankles above her head. Her clothes became powder that slid from her skin, and her braid dragged her head back until the braid rested on her bottom. Frantic, she tried to step out of the dream. Nothing happened. She hung doubled in midair like some netted creature, every muscle strained to its limit. Tremors ran through her. Her fingers twitched feebly, brushing her feet. She thought if she tried to move anything else, her back would break. Strangely, her fear was gone, now that it was too late. She was certain that she could have been quick enough, if not for the terror that had laced through her when she needed to act. All she wanted was a chance to put her hands around Mogadine's throat. Much good that does now. Every breath came in strained panting. Mogadine moved to where Nynaeve could see her, between the quivering triangle of her arms. The glow of Sayidar surrounded the woman mockingly.
"A detail from Grendal's chair," the Forsaken said.
Her dress was mist like Grendal's, sliding from black fog to nearly transparent, and back to gleaming silver. The fabric changed almost constantly. Nynaeve had seen her wear it before in Tanchico.
"Not something I would have thought of on my own, but Grendal can be edifying."
Nynaeve glared at her, but Mogadine did not appear to notice.
"I can hardly believe that you actually came hunting me. Did you really believe that because once you were lucky enough to catch me off guard, you might be my equal?"
The woman's laugh was cutting.
"If you only knew the effort I have put into finding you, and you came to me."
She glanced around at the wagons, studying the lions and bears for a moment before turning back to Nynaeve.
"A menagerie? That would make you easy enough to find, if I needed to, now."
"Do your worst, burn you," Nynaeve snarled, as best she could. Doubled up as she was, she had to force the words out one by one. She did not dare look straight toward Birgitta, not that she could have shifted her head enough to, but rolling her eyes as if caught between fury and fear, she caught a glimpse. Her stomach went hollow, even stretched tight as a sheepskin for drying. Birgitta lay sprawled on the ground, silver arrows spilling from the quiver at her waist, her silver bow a span from her unmoving hand.
"Lucky, you say. If you hadn't managed to sneak up on me, I'd have striped you till you wailed. I'd have wrung your neck like a chicken."
She had only one chance, if Birgitta was dead, and a bleak one, to make Mokadine so angry that she killed her quickly in a rage. If only there was some way to warn Elaine, her dying would have to do it.
"Remember how you said you'd use me for a mounting block? And later when I said I'd do the same for you? That was after I had beaten you, when you were whimpering and pleading for your life, offering me anything. You are a gutless coward. The leavings from a nightjar. You piece of—"
Something thick crawled into her mouth, flattening her tongue and forcing her jaws wide.
"You are so simple," Mogadine murmured. "Believe me, I am quite angry enough with you already. I do not think I will use you for a mounting block."
Her smile made Nynaeve's skin crawl.
"I think I will turn you into a horse. It is quite possible here. A horse, a mouse, a frog."
She paused, listening.
"A cricket.
And every time you come to Tel Iranriod, you'll be a horse until I change it. Or some other with the knowledge does so.
She paused again, looking almost sympathetic.
No, I'd not want to give you false hope. There are only 9 of us now who know that binding, and you would not want any of the others to have you any more than myself. You will be a horse every time I bring you here. You will have your own saddle and bridle. I will even braid your mane.
Nynaeve's braid jerked almost out of her scalp.
You will remember who you are even then, of course. I think I will enjoy our rides, though you may not.
Mogadine took a deep breath, and her dress darkened to something that glistened in the pale light. Nynaeve could not be sure, but she thought it might be the color of wet blood.
You make me approach Semirag. It will be well to be done with you, so I can turn my full attention to matters of importance. Is the little yellow-haired chit with you in this menagerie?
The thickness vanished from Nynaeve's mouth.
I'm alone, you stupid pain. As if she had been beaten from ankles to shoulders, every stroke landing at once.
She bellowed shrilly. Again. She tried to clamp her teeth shut, but her own endless shriek filled her ears. Tears rolled shamingly down her cheeks as she sobbed, waiting hopelessly for the next.
Is she with you? Mogadine said patiently. Do not waste time trying to make me kill you. I won't. You will live many years serving me. Your rather pitiful abilities might be of some use once I train them. Once I train you. But I can make you think that what you just felt was a lover's caress. Now answer my question.
Nynaeve managed to gather breath.
No, she wept. She ran off with a man after we left Tanchico. A man old enough to be her grandfather, but he had money. We heard what happened in the tower.
She was sure Mogadine must know of that.
And she was afraid to go back.
The other woman laughed.
A delightful tale. I can almost see what fascinates Semirag about breaking the spirit. Oh, you are going to provide me with a great deal of entertainment, Nynaeve Almira. But first, you are going to bring the girl Elaine to me. You will shield her and bind her and bring her to lie at my feet. Do you know why? Because some things are actually stronger in Tel Iranriod than in the waking world. That is why you will be a glossy white mare whenever I bring you here. And it is not only hurts taken here that last into waking. Compulsion is another. I want you to think of it for a moment or two before you begin believing it your own idea. I suspect that the girl is your friend. But you are going to bring her to me like a pet.
Mogadine screamed as a silver arrow suddenly stuck its head out from below her right breast. Nynaeve fell to the ground like a dropped sack. The fall knocked every speck of breath from her lungs as surely as a hammer in the belly. Straining to breathe, she struggled to make racked muscles move, to fight through pain to Sayidar. Staggering on her feet, Birgitta fumbled another arrow from her quiver.
Go, Nynaeve!
It was a mumbling shout.
Get away!
Birgitta's head wavered, and the silver bow wobbled as she raised it. The glow around Mogadine increased until it seemed as if the blinding sun surrounded her. The night folded in over Birgitta like an ocean wave, enveloping her in blackness. When it passed, the bow dropped atop empty clothes as they collapsed. The clothes faded like fog burning off, and only the bow and arrows remained, shining in the moonlight. Mogadine sank to her knees, panting, clutching the protruding arrow shaft with both hands as the glow around her faded and died. Then she vanished, and the silver arrow fell where she had been, stained dark with blood. After what seemed an eternity, Nynaeve managed to push up to hands and knees. Weeping, she crawled to Birgitta's bow. This time it was not pain that made tears come. Kneeling, naked and not caring, she clutched the bow.
I'm sorry, she sobbed. Oh, Birgitta, forgive me! Birgitta!
There was no answer except the mournful cry of a nightbird. Leandrin leaped to her feet as the door to Mogadine's bedchamber crashed open and the Chosen staggered into the sitting room, blood soaking her silk shift. Chesmal and Tamale rushed to her side, each taking an arm to keep the woman on her feet, but Leandrin remained by her chair. The others were out, perhaps out of Amador for all Leandrin knew. Mogadine told only what she wanted the hearer to know, and punished questions she did not like.
"What happened?" Tamale gasped.
Mogadine's brief look should have fried her where she stood.
"You have some small ability with healing," the Chosen told Chesmal thickly.
Blood stained her lips, trickled from the corner of her mouth in an increasing stream.
"Do it. Now, fool."
The dark-haired Gildanin woman did not hesitate in laying hands to Mogadine's head. Leandrin sneered to herself as the glow surrounded Chesmal. Concern painted Chesmal's handsome face, and Tamale's delicate fox-like features were contorted with pure fright and worry. So faithful they were, such obedient lapdogs. Mogadine lifted up onto her toes, head flung back. Eyes wide, she shook, breath rushing from her gaping mouth as if she had been plunged into ice. In moments it was done. The glow around Chesmal disappeared, and Mogadine's heels settled to the blue and green patterned carpet. Without Tamale's support, she might have fallen. Only a part of the strength for healing came from the power. The rest came from the person being healed. Whatever wound had caused all that bleeding would be gone, but Mogadine was surely as weak as if she had lain in bed an invalid for weeks. She pulled the fine gold and ivory silk scarf from Tamale's belt to wipe her mouth as the woman helped her turn toward the bedchamber door. Weak, and her back turned. Leandrin struck as hard as she ever had with everything she had puzzled out of what the woman had done to her. Even as she did, Saidar seemed to fill Mogadine like a flood. Leandrin's probe died as the source was shielded from her. Flows of air picked her up and slammed her against the paneled wall hard enough to make her teeth rattle. Spread-eagled, helpless, she hung there. Chesmal and Tamale exchanged confused glances, as if they did not understand what had occurred. They continued to support Mogadine as she came to stand in front of Leandrin, still calmly wiping her mouth on Tamale's scarf. Mogadine channeled, and the blood on her shift turned black and flaked away, falling to the carpet.
"You do not understand, great mistress," Leandrin said frantically.
"I only wished to help you to have the good sleep."
For once in her life, slipping back into the accents of a commoner did not concern her in the least.
"I only—"
She cut off with a strangled gagging as a flow of air seized her tongue, stretching it out between her teeth. Her brown eyes bulged, a hair more pressure, and—
"Shall I pull it out?"
Mogadine studied her face, but spoke as if to herself.
"I think not.
A pity for you that the Almira woman makes me think like Semirag. Otherwise I might only kill you." Suddenly she was tying off the shield, the knot growing ever more intricate until Leandrin lost the twists and turns completely, and still it went on.
"There," Mogadine said finally, in tones of satisfaction. "You will search a very long time to find anyone who can unravel that, but you will have no opportunity to search."
Leandrin searched Chesmal's face, and Tamale's, for some sign of sympathy, pity, anything. Chesmal's eyes were cold and stern. Tamale's shone, and she touched her lips with the tip of her tongue and smiled. Not a friendly smile.
"You thought you had learned something of compulsion," Mogadine went on. "I will teach you a bit more."
For an instant, Leandrin shivered, Mogadine's eyes filling her vision as the woman's voice filled her ears, her entire head.
"Live."
The instant passed, and sweat beaded on Leandrin's face as the Chosen smiled at her.
"Compulsion has many limits, but a command to do what someone wants to do in their inmost depths will hold for a lifetime.
You will live, however much you think you want to take your life. And you will think of it. You will lie weeping many nights, wishing for it. The flow holding Leandrin's tongue vanished, and she barely paused to swallow. Please, great mistress, I swear I did not mean... Her head rang, and silvery black spots danced before her eyes from Mogadine's slap. There are attractions to doing a thing physically, the woman breathed. Do you wish to beg more? Please, great mistress, the second slap sent her hair flying. More? Please, a third nearly unhinged her jaw. Her cheek burned. If you cannot be more inventive than that, I will not listen. You will listen instead. I think what I have planned for you would delight Semirag herself. Mogadine's smile was almost as dark as Tamale's. You will live, not stilled, but knowing that you could channel again if only you found someone to untie your shield. Yet that is only the beginning. Evan will be glad of a new scullery girl, and I am sure the Arene woman will want to have long talks with you about her husband. Why, they will enjoy your company so much that I doubt you will see the outside of this house during the years to come. Long years in which to wish that you had served me faithfully. Leandrin shook her head, mouthing no and please. She was crying too hard to force the words out. Turning her head to Tamale, Mogadine said, Prepare her for them, and tell them they are not to kill or maim her. I want her always to believe she might escape. Even futile hope will keep her alive to suffer. She turned away on Chesmal's arm, and the flows holding Leandrin to the wall vanished. Her legs gave way like straw, crumpling her to the carpet. Only the shield remained. She hammered at it futilely as she crawled after Mogadine, trying to catch the hem of her shift, sobbing brokenly. Please, great mistress. They are with a menagerie, Mogadine told Chesmal. All of your searching, and I had to find them myself. A menagerie should not be too difficult to locate. I will serve faithfully, Leandrin wept. Fear turned her limbs to water. She could not crawl fast enough to catch up. They did not even look back at her, scrabbling across the carpet after them. Bind me, great mistress, anything. I will be the faithful dog. There are many menageries traveling north, Chesmal said, eagerness to negate her failure filling her voice. To Gildan, great mistress. Then I must to Gildan, Mogadine said. You will procure fast horses and follow. The bedchamber door closed on her words. I will be the faithful dog, Leandrin sobbed in a heap on the carpet. Lifting her head, she blinked tears away to see Tamale watching her, rubbing her arms and smiling. We could overwhelm her, Tamale. We three together could... We three? Tamale laughed. You could not overwhelm Fat Evan. Her eyes narrowed as she studied the shield fastened to Leandrin. You might as well be stilled. Listen, please. Leandrin swallowed hard, trying to clear her voice, but it was still thick, if burning with urgency, when she went on at frantic speed. We have spoken of the dissension that must rule among the Chosen. If Mogadine hides herself so, she must hide from the other Chosen. If we take her and give her to them, think of the places we could have. We could be exalted above kings and queens. We could be chosen ourselves. For a moment, one blessed, wonderful moment, the child-faced woman hesitated. Then she shook her head. You have never known how high to lift your eyes. Who reaches for the sun will be burned. No, I think that I will not be burned for reaching too high. I think that I will do as I am told, and soften you for Evan. Suddenly she smiled, showing teeth that made her even more vulpine. How surprised he will be when you crawl to kiss his feet. Leandrin started screaming before Tamale even began.